This is the Popmatic Podcast for August 10th, 2016.
I miss the robot's precision.
Today we carry a torch for the Olympics.
And nobody moved.
You guys messed up when you made me the host. It's the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am IOC Chairman and frequent bribe taker, Mike. And joining me today are...
Olympic fan, Amanda.
Bill.
And a robot. Today are the first quadrennial ceremonies of the Poplympiad, celebrating the Olympics or sports or whatever our esteemed pop culture athletes can muster. Will they earn a medal or be forgotten like Atlanta Olympics mascot Blueberry Sperm? Or what's it? Or Izzy? Stay tuned.
I forgot about that.
I was in Atlanta in 1996.
Probably did care about that more.
Thousands and thousands of weird foreigners like coming in, into my bookstores and stuff, and asking strange questions. And
I think when they come to Nashville for the Olympics, I'm just going to go on vacation for 2 weeks.
Why not? It'll be like the CMA festival for
but like
about
quadrupled.
A month. And then you'll get some mascot that's super embarrassing that like you'll remember like long after everyone's forgotten.
Guitar and like running shorts or something. That's what our mascot would be.
All right, cold open. Amanda.
But it's the Summer Olympics. I can't do a cold open.
Warm open.
It's a hot open.
Amanda, what can you cycle for us today?
So it is finally here. It's Olympic time. Yay. Mm. And I am so excited. I have been waiting for this all summer. And I always tell myself that I like the Winter Olympics better. But then I remember all the cool summer events like beach volleyball, cycling, track and field, and gymnastics. And I have to just sidebar here for a second and say that my favorite commercial on TV right now is the Reese's commercial with Lindsay Vonn, where you do the Summer Olympics like a Winter Olympian, because she's a skier, but that she's like trying to like get on a horse and she can't get on a horse and like she hits herself with some track and field thing and it's funny.
Do summer like a Winter Olympian. Have a Reese's.
So feel free to enjoy that.
And I believe it's called Reese's.
What did I say?
Reese's. It drives me nuts.
Oh, like Reese's. Oh, sorry. That's how we say it in the North, okay?
Whatever. Damn Yankees.
Okay, but so let's not forget about swimming. Swimming is a big event with the Olympics. Now, most of us probably remember the 2008 Beijing Olympics where Michael Phelps won 8 gold medals. That was a pretty impressive feat, but Team USA has always been no stranger to winning Olympic medals in swimming. So if we go back a few short years to 2000 in Sydney, we remember American swimmer Anthony Irvin. He won the 50-meter freestyle event, which earned him the title of the fastest swimmer in the world. So the 50 free in swimming is equivalent basically to the 100-meter dash in track and field. So this means that Irvin's talent is comparable to that of Usain Bolt, the incredibly speedy Jamaican runner who is also running in Rio this week. So in his recent book, Chasing Water, Elegy of an Olympian, Irvin, with the help of biographer/writer Constantine Marquitas, tells the story about what happened after his brief 15 minutes of fame. So unlike the usual ghostwriter situation, here Marquitas and Irvin kind of trade off and they take turns telling the story. So Irvin writes his portion of the book in first person, which I thought made it quite a bit more relatable than just kind of telling the story at me. And then Marquitas comes in and kind of explains background and puts the story into a setting, which helps kind of give a little bit more depth to Irvin's anecdotes. So Irvin celebrated his success at Sydney by getting kicked out of the Olympic Village for repeatedly missing curfew. So
wow,
he's a good role model, kiddies. And so then he kind of disappeared off the face of the earth, spent the next decade couch surfing, exploring drugs, other mind-altering substances, and basically waiting to die. So, you know,
a happy book.
It got a little dark. But it wasn't until he wrote a particularly personal essay for an English class at Berkeley where he was training that he decided swimming was something he could do for fun and was not a prison for him. So after starting slowly back into training, Irvin chose to enroll in the Olympic trials for the London Games in 2012. And he did manage to make the team, and he made the final medal swim, but he had a really bad start, which knocked him out of medal contention, and he ended up in fifth, which I would still take. You're still the fifth fastest swimmer in the world.
They don't have medals for that, you know? It's not the aluminum medal or something.
They don't get a little participation ribbon.
Oh,
poor you little robot. So in his book, Irvin describes how much better the 2012 Olympic Games was. Even though he didn't win, he felt like he was in more control of his life and wasn't the tortured teenager he was in Sydney. I'll admit that I'm not too shocked by the hedonistic nature of the story. Unfortunately, it's not unique when highly disciplined athletes who feel totally controlled by their parents, their coaches, even their countries, decide that enough is enough. However, I was impressed at how Irvin kind of pulled himself out of the downward spiral. And he had a couple of life or death moments, but he chose life and completely refocused his talents. So Irvin is still swimming. He is on the U.S. swim team for the Rio Games, which makes this his third Olympics. He's swimming in the 50 free, which is his main event. And he actually just won some pro event in, I think it was South Carolina last week, with one of his fastest times. So he's still got some skills. He also qualified for the 4x100 freestyle relay. So he's got two chances for a medal. And if you're watching the games and you don't know who he is the swimmer that has tattoo sleeves. Like, both of his arms are just covered with tattoos.
Okay.
So that's Anthony Irvin. Feel free to vote for him. USA! USA!
Unironic USA. He's not the tiny dumb guy who was there with Michael Phelps. The guy who's like a reality show or something.
No, right? That's Ryan Lochte.
Right, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, he was injured in trials and he qualified, but he might just be on relays. I think maybe he got one event or two, but like he missed a bunch of events that he medaled in because he was injured. Yeah. And a groin injury.
I remember, there was like, Michael Phelps, the Golden Boy. And then there's Ryan Lochte, who can't add two and two together.
He was cuter, though, so the girls like him.
Oh.
And Michael Phelps is back, too. He cut his events way down. He's only in, like, two or three events.
Didn't he get kicked out of doing, like, Wheaties because he was doing
He lost his sponsorship. He got, because he had that one dope thing, but now he's... He's engaged now and has a baby. And
oh, wow.
He's kind of his baby was at the trials, and she was cute.
There's nothing wrong with chemicals, gang. So, long-time listeners know that I'm not one of those nerds who like reading or video games. I'm more of a huge muscle-bound jock. Yeah. Ripped. Roids. Why I composed this intro while lifting a baby grand piano with one hand and a baby elephant with the other.
Well, you got to balance. That makes sense.
Yeah. Then you switch them.
Juggle.
I played it with my teeth. deciding on just one of a zillion Olympic-related pop culture ephemera that instantly flooded my pea brain was tricky, especially since I obviously spent all my free time dragging Greyhound buses with my teeth. Who doesn't? I had to think back, far enough back to when I was just a tiny jock who could drag VW buses with his teeth. Back to 1993. If only anybody loved my jokes as much as I.
Too bad he's been banished.
Yeah, too bad he's in prison.
Ooh, evil robot laugh.
Evil robot engaged his laugh circuits. Back to 1993 for a frosty little film called Cool Runnings.
You zigging? You zagging?
Always remember, your bones will not break in a bobsled.
No, they shatter.
So, who wants in?
We're looking for a sponsor for the first Jamaican bobsled team.
Their dream was to compete in the Olympics. But they chose a sport they knew nothing about.
Good.
In a climate they had never been.
Cold weather endurance is vital to building a successful sled team.
This is the true story of four unlikely athletes.
How about I beat your butt right now?
How about I draw a line down the middle of your head so it looks like a butt?
Who weren't prepared for what they were about to face.
It's a beautiful afternoon in Calgary. And there is a lot more coming up.
Is this whole thing a big joke?
I can't get my helmet on. Thanks, coach.
Why don't you put some training wheels on that sled?
Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
Leave the bobsledding to the real man.
You know, you're going to have to do this on your own one day.
Oh! You have no business here, Jamaica.
People are always afraid of what's different.
Now!
God!
But they found in each other...
Do you really expect these Jamaicans to qualify?
...the courage to give it their all.
Not only are they going to qualify, they're going to turn some heads doing it.
I see pride. I see power!
And they took the whole world along for the ride.
Is to follow your dreams.
Follow your dreams.
Walt Disney Pictures presents...
I am feeling very Olympic today.
A story for anyone who dares to stand out in a crowd.
I didn't come up here to forget who I am and where I come from.
And everyone with the courage...
Cool, ready!
...to stand up for their dreams.
How will I know if I'm enough?
When you cross that finish line...
Where did these guys come from?
Jamaica!
You'll know.
Cool Runnings.
So what are we going to name this sled?
Tallulah.
Tallulah.
That's my mother's name.
Tallulah. That's a nice
name. I like it.
The movie begins in 1988 in Jamaica, one sprinter named Junior Bevel trips and takes two other sprinters with him. Oh, no. I think the credits don't even end before he, like, trips over two other dudes. One of the other failed sprinters is named Derice, who, frustrated with his loss, decides that instead of going to the summer games, he'll go to the winter games in Calgary later that year. Because note to children and millennials, both winter and summer games used to be the same year. It was kind of neat. Although, you know,
Olympic overload.
You paid attention to the summer ones and took a nap during the winter ones. Except for Amanda, I guess.
Figure skating.
What's that one with that where you like ski and then shoot and then...
Oh, yeah. What is that called? Yeah, I can't remember. I watched that too.
Yeah.
That is one. Is it triathlon? Is that...
No, is it decathlon?
Is it the decathlon? Bicathlon?
Biathlon.
Okay. Thank you, sure. Eagle Robot.
Wow. Chiming
Engage.
In with his robot hand.
On robot's bucket list.
Oh, robot kit list. Oh, with his friend / pushcart champion, Sanka Coffee.
Hey, Sanka.
Which made me laugh so much. It made me laugh instantly.
Seriously, folks.
Oh, sorry. In the bobsled competition, what? Because Jamaica, of course, doesn't have a bobsled team, as it never snows and or gets icy there. So they can instantly make the team because it doesn't exist. Darius. And Sanka recruit Junior, the guy who tripped him in the sprinting trials, and another person that Junior also tripped over, the enigmatic Yul Brynner. Which is obviously a fake name because this guy's Jamaican and Yul Brynner was dead at the time. But he never actually offers his real name, and they call him Yul throughout the whole movie. And he's just in the credits as Yul Brynner, which 13-year-old Mike, tiny jock, found very funny. The guys hire Irv Blitzer, played by John Candy.
I forgot the John Candy.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I love John Candy.
As a fat kid in the 80s, I loved everything he was in. Also, check out Who's Harry Crumb and Delirious. Delirious is great. I broke no disagreement. Who's a disgraced former bobsled?
Like sushi chef from last week. It's hard to say.
Well, you know, I just picture like the fat X-Men guy and a evil monster from two 50s movies in one sled together. That'd be awesome. Bobsled. And current bookie to coach the team. Irv was fired due to cheating. And there's actually a minor subplot in the movie where he tries to regain the trust of the Olympic Committee and stuff. Since they can't get a sponsor, sidebar, I read a note this morning that players who aren't wearing Nike shoes are required to cover up their logos with tape.
So Nike is the official footwear of the 2016 Rio Olympic
they're
Games?
They're the sole sponsor.
Oh, jeez. I opened that up for you.
Yay, did. It's great. Oh, the Punmatic Puncast will return, gang. They try various schemes to raise money to get themselves to Calgary, and eventually Junior is forced to sell his car. That sucks. When they get to Canada, they get a creaky old sled to practice on because up until then they've been practicing on push carts. See also no verse snows and or ice. They get a lot of crap from the other countries that are competing, and there's even some scandal within the Olympic Committee itself as to whether they should be allowed to play in the first place. How do they do? You'll just have to see it. Oh, you're on track to see it. Also note that other than sunny Jamaica going to the Winter Olympics. Nearly everything in the movie is fictional. All the characters.
So they really did go to the Olympics,
they
though.
They do, like, go to the Olympics.
They still have a bobsled team.
Yeah, yeah. It's like every time I see them, I cheer. All like three of them, and they, like, I think they've never gotten in the top 10 or something, which is a bummer. Spoiler alert. Sidebar, again, while researching this article, I discovered that on the soundtrack, there's is where Jimmy Cliff's cover of I Can See Clearly Now came from, which I listened to a bunch in the mid-90s. A feel-good song that melts even my dark heart. It's on Hoopla.
Do you, have they, because the, I just, okay, let me start with the beginning. I just watched Eddie the Eagle, and,
it did seem to have a similar,
because he was at Calgary, like, it was the same Olympics.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've since made a rule that you have to have jumped a certain, like, he's a ski jumper, you had to jump a certain distance in order to qualify, because he was the only Great Britain ski jumper. It was kind of like that, like, he just, hey, I'm going to go ski jump, and they're like, okay. I mean, they kind of fought him a little more than that, but...
Every time I saw the trailers, I'm like, I saw Cool Runnings. I don't need to see Cool Runnings with a, you know, lone British white dude.
Yeah, it was kind of like in Wolverine was his coach. But, so...
And he's the dude from Kingsman. The main character guy of Kingsman, the Secret Service. Did you ever see that?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's him with, like, a tiny mustache. Yeah.
Okay.
Weird.
I see that. But I just, I didn't know if they, they don't have a rule that, like... For bobsled, that you have to have
apparently
competed,
not.
They said that, still just go.
Why this segues into something else I read, where, like, apparently every sport of the Olympics has, like, their own committee. So there's, like, an international bobsledding and skeleton committee.
Nice.
I'm like, skeleton committee, cool. I want to get on that.
You know what skeleton is, don't you?
No.
It's like luge, but you face forward, like you lay on your stomach and go down the bobsled run. That's skeleton. Luge is when you lay on your back and go down, like, feet first. But we skeleton, all, you go down head first.
We all know what I thought skeleton was, gang.
You thought, was, you thought it was like He-Man.
Yeah, you know. It's Skeletor committee. I'll get you, He-Man.
By the power of Grayskull.
What do you have, Bill?
Sorry, I derailed the podcast. You're welcome.
He derailed it.
It's just going back to Eddie the Eagle. Uh-oh. I remember... After the Calgary Olympics, if that's what it was.
Yeah, Calgary,
I remember.
Yeah.
Okay. He was on, the actual guy was on the Johnny Carson show.
Probably.
And
really?
I vividly remember it. He had enough celebrity, and I still
really?
Remember that. Yeah.
Wow.
He came in, like, the guy, the IOC guy that was closing the ceremonies, like, mentioned him in the closing ceremonies.
Wow.
Like, he was dead last in both jumps. And he did, like, he did the 70 meter and the 90 meter. He was dead last. But everybody loved him.
Yeah.
Wow.
So. Well, it's sort of like that Rocky thing. He went the
distance. Yeah, he went the distance.
He went the distance.
Aww. And it was a Great Britain record. I mean, it wasn't like he was just...
He did set a record because he's the only
country
guy.
Record. I mean,
and for another, I remember this. Burt Reynolds was on the same show. So it was nice. It was weird.
You were there for Burt and stayed for Eddie the Eagle.
Well, Eddie Eagle was on first, believe it.
Yeah, he probably was. Yeah,
yeah.
Burt probably wanted.
So you do it, and also he's very enthusiastic. You know,
yeah,
like the other, it stayed, but you know, he made it. It was like, yes, I did this. I made it to the Olympics when he made the jump. It was.
Yeah.
He accomplished something.
Because he tried to get into the 84 Olympics as a skier, like just a downhill skier, and they wouldn't take him. So he's like, well, I'm going to do ski jump because nobody else does ski jump.
See, I would have recommended Eddie the Eagle had I seen it, but I'd heard that, like, in real life, he's kind of a jerk. So
it kind of sounds like he's kind of done the Anthony Irvin and kind of like now he's been on, like, British game shows and, like, he doesn't really, like, I don't think he has a job. Like, he's just kind of.
He's just coasting on something.
Yeah, he's been coasting
20
for 20 years.
Ago, 30 years ago.
It's Eddie Eagle. Interesting.
Yeah, so. Huh.
Yeah, well, on that non-Skeletor note, what do you have, Bill?
Well, of course, in the upcoming Olympics, there's a controversy about Russia. Russia has used an elaborate cheating scheme dating back for years. The cheating scheme is doping, and according to Wikipedia, for those not in the know, doping refers to the use of banned athletic performance-enhancing drugs by athletic competitors. The book and movie I want to recommend is Seven Deadly Sins, My Pursuit of Lance Armstrong by journalist David Walsh, which is the book the movie is based on, which is The Program, directed by Stephen Frears, starring Ben Foster, Chris O'Dowd, and Jesse Plemons.
I was going to read it up.
It's not that I'm more gifted than anybody else. It's this desire.
Lance, right? You won all those races in America, but you don't win here.
Dr. Ferrari?
I want to be like one of your guys. I want to be on whatever program they're on.
You just tell me what to do, I'll do it.
This is science, no longer confined to Earth. Now we had learned to fly.
I have my interview with Armstrong today.
I just love to ride my bike.
Not lacking in confidence.
He recovered from cancer and turned into bloody Superman.
You think that's natural?
Why are you so obsessed with this?
Why are you not obsessed with this?
Your job is to protect Lance.
Okay, guys, the bar's open.
When you say, I can't go any further, say to yourself, I'm flying.
I'm flying.
Lance Armstrong, handsome young, inspirer of millions, cannot possibly be a cheat. He's clearly doping and nobody else can see it.
Lance.
Did you ever visit Ferrari? Can I get a yes or a no on that?
Extraordinary allegation must be met with extraordinary proof.
I've never tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs.
I am the most tested athlete on the face of the planet. I have never tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs.
I used to believe in this sport, and Armstrong is killing it.
I like this. I like somebody trying to go faster than me.
I know your boy was cheating. If he gets caught, I'll be back.
How many times do I have to say it?
I've never tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs.
You sold the bikes to pay for drugs?
You and me were all on the program.
I didn't sign up for this.
I hope you realize what we're up against.
Sue David Walsh.
I have the money and the power to destroy you.
Can't censor this. It's too important.
I want to confess.
I'm Lance Armstrong, and I will not be brought down.
As you gather, I will be discussing Lance Armstrong, who is not an Olympian, but a professional road racing cyclist who won the Tour de France 7 consecutive times, but was stripped of his Tour de France victories in 2012 after a protracted doping scandal. During the Olympics, you'll probably hear quite a bit about doping, sadly. I know this is looking on the dark side of sporting events, but being a child of the 1970s with the end of the Vietnam War and Watergate, I just can't help myself. I find it engrossing. The movie, The Program, was released in 2015, but was not released in many theaters. It was released on VOD, video on demand, and DVD markets. A shame. I'm a huge fan of the director. Stephen Frears directed Dangerous Liaisons, The Grifters, Dirty Pretty Things, and The Queen. What I find interesting about the program, it's ego out of control. No one wanted to go after Lance Armstrong. A, he was a cancer survivor, and he played that to the hilt. And B, he did a lot for cycling. He did put it on the map, and a lot of people wanted to stay that way. This is a quote from the book Seven Deadly Sins. Like a cat pawing at a nest of mice, Lance Armstrong saw his journalist as part of the gang. There were those, the majority, who were happy to scurry along hailing him as the champion cat. And there were those who said, hey, wait a minute. This is the species we're known as trolls. I lived and worked the trolls. Lance viewed me as mayor of Troll City. So it's an interesting cat and mouse story. That's probably one of the reasons why I did like the movie and the book, too. So the book is The Seven Deadly Sins, My Pursuit of Lance Armstrong by David Walsh, and The Program directed by Stephen Frears. It's not necessarily Olympics, but doping has now become a huge part of sports that I thought, well, it would fit in somehow.
Is David Walsh, is he the one that kind of broke the Lance story?
Yeah.
I mean, is he the reason they figured it out?
He's the sports correspondent who broke the whole thing.
Mm.
Is there a documentary, too?
Could be. I'm not familiar with that. I don't know if the library has it, but the library does have a program and the book that it's based.
The Robot was interjecting because the other movie that Mike might have been thinking of was Alex Kennedy's documentary, which was...
That would be The Armstrong Lie.
It's supposed to be a fluff piece about Lance Armstrong, but in the middle of filming...
Yes!
It all came out. But Lance Armstrong, I mean, in his defense, agreed to keep doing the documentary, and the nature of the documentary completely changed. And I believe that the Evil Robot has talked about the documentary before.
I heard the documentary is, like, really good.
Well, it's a fascinating story. It's just, you know... Well, last year there was Spotlight, which dealt with a similar subject. Yeah. You know, why are people scared to go after these institutions and if they're clearly doing wrong and it's been going on for so long?
They're called franchise players for a reason.
I find that fascinating.
Yeah, hasn't he never formally admitted to doing anything? He just like, I'm not going to talk about this.
Yeah.
You could take my medals and I don't care. And it's like,
he's just.
It'd be interesting to like, you know. Go into more of the sociopathy as he's like, you know, coming up with these charities and such.
I can't speak to the issue in Spotlight, but in sports, it's about money, right? Mm-hmm. So,
people suddenly care about cycling.
Yeah, if you win, you make a lot of money, and there's a lot of money involved. So, you know, I think people are willing to cheat to make more money. But interestingly, that in the Kidney documentary, for sure, one of the things that comes out is that. It wasn't just Lance that was doing this, right? It was many, many people. It was like baseball in the 90s, and you're a baseball fan, so I don't know how you feel about this, but it's one of those...
No way.
Like, within cycling, it's one of those things where, like, it wasn't just, like, one person was doing it. So, you know, how does the sport deal with that? I think that's been unresolved in cycling, and I think that's still unresolved in a lot of sports.
I heard an interesting book, which I guess you'll have to splice in the title of, because I don't remember.
That would be Twilight of the Elites. America After Meritocracy by Christopher Hayes.
But like is basically saying that like one time to succeed in this country you were basically born into it, but about like 50 or 60 years ago it became like merit based, and so like a lot of things like basically cheating is becoming endemic in like a lot of institutions because you have to like stay at your level or higher just to like, you know, succeed or, you know, stay in that level. So they're saying that, like, you know, sports is cheating because, like, you know, you used to be able to just kind of coast. Once you made it to the big leagues, I guess, you could do okay for a little while and then you left. But now you want to, like, you know, you make as much money as you can and stick around much longer, you know.
Well, not that they don't, but they were talking about women's gymnastics last night. And they said not only has no one ever won back-to-back all-around gold medals, they said there's only been, like, two people in the last 20 years that have made back-to-back teams.
Wow.
And you're talking, like, 13-year-old girls.
Yeah.
They can't make it by the time they're 17.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's just how the – and, like, I was watching the swim trials, and Missy Franklin, who won 4 gold medals in London, didn't make the events that she won gold medals in this year because with her gold medal – like, she basically had her gold medal time. Her gold medal time would not have qualified because times have gotten so much faster in 4 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just – you see why, but it's just sad that happens to – that has to be that way, you know?
Yeah.
Just train harder. Get a real job.
Take that 8-year-old girl.
That's right.
Get new dreams.
You're slacking off. You're 14. What are you doing with your life?
Yeah, they take, like, weird hormones, so they're, like, you know, they had to delay puberty or something.
Yeah, they try to – they don't take – I don't think they take hormones, but they do try to delay it as long as possible.
Yeah, weird.
Like Gabby Douglas talks about that in her book that she put out after.
That would be Grace, Gold, and Glory by Gabrielle Douglas.
Whoa, really?
After London, that she.
So they didn't use hormones? What they do?
She doesn't talk about, like, but she was talking about delaying, like, trying to delay puberty as long as possible because your body changes and you.
Yeah. Wow. Weird.
Yeah.
But the elaborateness of these doping schemes, I mean, what they would do and stuff, it's amazing.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, maybe
the library does it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Amanda.
Me. Okay, so the event I'm going to talk about from my fancy tickle did not happen at an Olympic game, but its genesis was born there. So in 1952, the world gathered in Helsinki, Finland for the Summer Games. Now, this was the first time the Russians came to compete since World War II. So everybody was really kind of buzzing that it was going to be a battle between the U.S. and Russia as to who would win the most medals, which it turned out to be. So England was still struggling to rebuild itself a decade after the war, and they had pinned their hopes on Roger Bannister, who was a young miler who looked primed to take the gold medal. Now, unfortunately, because of the number of competitors, they added an extra heat, and so he wore himself out running in the preliminary heats, and he had nothing for the final race, where he came in a disappointing fourth. Wah, wah. So in his 2004 book, The Perfect Mile by Neil Bascom, we read how Bannister was so upset about letting his country down that he vowed to redeem himself by becoming the first man to run the mile in under 4 minutes. And he wasn't alone. So he also were competing in this with Australia's John Landy and U.S. runner Wes Santee, who trained and ran collegially at the University of Kansas. Now, both men were at Helsinki as well, but they'd also suffered disappointments, and so they were looking for a bit of redemption. Now, I am not a runner, but I did find this book compelling. I also knew ahead of time that Bannister was the first guy to succeed at running a 4-minute mile. Spoiler alert. But I had no idea how long it actually took him to accomplish it. I was engrossed in the battle between the three men. It was especially interesting because with Landy being in Australia, his track season was during Bannister and Santee's off seasons, because he's in the southern hemisphere, so the seasons are different. So that kind of upped the ante for all three parties. They were all watching each other to see who was going to do it first. Now, the world had wondered if it was even physically possible for a man to run a 4-minute mile, and Bannister showed them that it was, but his record only lasted 46 days. John Landy ended up beating him at another event 46 days after he originally ran it. Bannister ran his mile also on a cinder track, which when we were little, track was cinder,
It was on fire and now the ashes are left.
Yeah, like it's like gravel, but it's like finer. Like it's black and it's just like
cool.
So it's not like solid pavement, like it's dirt. Like a
fire's cool.
Yeah. So as you know, as equipment and athletic gear has gotten steadily better, times have still improved. So today's world mile record is 3 minutes, 43 seconds and 13/100ths. Which is currently held by a Moroccan runner. Now, the women have yet to break the 4-minute mile mark. The Russians currently hold the record at 4 minutes, 12 seconds, and 56/100ths. And no, this does not make me want to go out and train to be the first woman to break the 4-minute mile. I will leave that to professionals because that's insane. But I will say this is one of the better books I've read in a really long time, and it was kind of shocking. It just came across my desk, and I was like, oh, that looks interesting. So I read it, and I enjoyed it. So, The Perfect Mile.
I learned at the gym I can walk a 13-minute mile. Not as cool. Fine.
I can do a mile and a half in about 14 minutes.
Yeah, see. We could be Olympians.
I do it on a daily basis. Then I run up the stairs and stick my arms in the air. In a gray sweatshirt.
On the walking track, 20 minutes to do a mile.
Yeah, see.
You're probably faster than that.
Yeah, you know. If you're chased by zombies, you could do it faster.
Yeah.
You guys can do the zombie run app and walk.
Yeah, they could, like, you use the backward camera and you look behind you and there's, like, zombies over your shoulder or something. That'd be cool.
It's like Pokemon Go. With zombies.
Pokemon Go! As a Pokemon, they're chasing you. Oh, no. Pikachu. No Pika.
I guess if you walked, maybe they would eat you. I don't know how sexual it is.
I'm not a fan of any app that makes me go outside.
Outside it's dumb.
Unlike Duran Duran, I'm not going to Rio today.
Her name is Rio and she dances on the sand.
Because, you know, sinister cyborg Brachytis has been programmed to vaporize anyone who recommends two things in the Fancy Tickler segment. So I will settle on something that is more time sensitive. This Friday and Saturday, August... whatever those days are, at midnight, at the
6 and 7,
maybe. At the very well, you
no,
know, whatever
no,
this
no,
is, this,
be
this
next week.
That's the past, Amanda. Pish pash.
I don't do math. I'm stuck in Olympic land.
12th and 13th, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
That
sounds better.
At the very new and slightly improved Bell Court, they're showing Belladonna of Sadness. I'm really excited for this one, gang. Oh, boy. It's a long-lost anime from the 70s about a young woman in medieval Europe who becomes accused of witchcraft and her eventual revenge on her accusers. Yeah. Plot-wise, it sounds kind of like The Witch mixed with Carrie and a dab of Miss 45. artistically. Instead of traditional animation, it's supposed to be a lot of focusing in on like static paintings. It's very like groovy and psychedelic, you know. Supposedly it's one of those movies that could be better with the aid of a certain substances, you know. But since I'm a square, I'm only going to drink booze.
Steroids, you mean? Like yeah, train really hard and then you see the movie?
Yeah!
I'm sad!
Yeah! I'm going to like, you know, go there on my bus, my tiny baby elephant. Yeah! Boomed, ready.
You're going to need two seats because you're going to be so buff. Excuse me. Can I have a seat for my left arm?
Yeah, my upper arms will be so big that the guy whose upper arms burst will be like jettisoned. Small moons orbit them. I called this one, you know, Rodeus. So, that's all I got. What do you got, Bill?
Well, I've got another movie. You know, before you go to Mike's Midnight Movie,
yeah.
You can come down to the main auditorium downtown 615 Church Street, Nashville Public Library. We are showing a film noir from the 1950s, directed by Don Siegel, famous for Dirty Harry, called The Lineup, shot on location. This is what I like about it, shot on location in San Francisco. It's like Eli Wallach's second film role, and he plays this hitman going through San Francisco looking for a stash of heroin. That's the basic plot.
The never-before-told Super Chase crime hunt story 30 million loyal lineup fans have been waiting for. Too big, too hot for TV.
I highly recommend it, and The Lineup was a television show, which I've never seen, that came on in the 50s, and they did a big screen adaptation of this.
Wow.
And it says here, too hot, too big for TV, the manhunt they had to put on a giant size movie theater screen. And you can see it on our big screen on August 13th, 2016 at 2 p.m. A great film directed by Don Siegel, starring Eli Wallach, The Lineup.
Does anybody have correction?
I don't have any corrections.
I do not.
Well, before he was busted for taking bribes for Russia, former IOC chairman Jeremy had this to say. Sinister cyborg Brachutis said that in his steed, when it's actually in his stead, perhaps he should upgrade his dictionary module.
Upgrade.
For more information on dictionary modules, cyborgs, and the Olympic Committee, you could go to
www.library.nashville.org.
Our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
You can subscribe to the Pop Medic Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, RSS, etc.
The show was edited by an evil robot.
Next week, Shakespeare returneth. Shall I compare Shakespeare-themed Pop Medic Podcasts to a summer's day? Thou art more lazy and more temperate. Rough winds do shake our darling podcast release schedule, and summer's lease hath too short a date.
Okay, you want to know something funny? I was reading your notes upside down, and I thought you said Sharknado.
Sharknado theme podcast!
And I made it Sharknado. What ho?
Shall I compare thee to a shark's fin hat?
Where's thou a chain of sloth?
We'll be right back. Well, you make billions of stuff, and, you know. There's still Livestrong stuff lying around.
And you know what Lance Armstrong is doing now? Hmm. Podcasting.
What? Yeah, no way.
Yeah, you can look up, you type in. I just discovered he's just started doing it. He's interviewing people like Chris Everett and things of that nature. I haven't listened to it.
That's interesting.
So, like, yeah.
Awkward.
Yeah, can they ask questions back? Like,
so. So how's your career been since the whole doping thing?
Yeah, wow.
You still cycle every day.